Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
It's out of here! Run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to continued success at the tail end of your week in winter meetings for Major League Baseball. Just a real fun week to be involved with the sport. Just think of all the meetings and conference rooms and stale donuts and free pens that were exchanged at this year's winter meetings. It's wild and it's fun to cover for a website that needs to obsess about this sort of thing during the period of the calendar when the baseball is not being played. I am Justin Clue, Phillies writer for The Good Fight. And with me is Yahoo Sports' own Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz. Was it a fun week for you as well?
It was. No. I guess it was sort of fun, but it was just a whole lot of nothing, you know, aside from, you know, the Phillies did something, which is great, but, you know, no one else really did anything. It's like Bryce Harper might be visiting somewhere. Manny Machado will be visiting somewhere in a few weeks. There are other guys and no one cares.
This is another year where it felt like you really just caught yourself remembering that, like, this is an event that has the word meetings in the title. And if you've ever been to a meeting, which...
Let's all just get excited about meetings.
A lot of adults have. Have you ever been to a meeting that you felt warranted national coverage of every component, like every exchange, every conversation? Have you ever been to a meeting like that? Because I gotta tell you, I have never been to a meeting that I thought I came out of and was like, other people need to know about what happened in there. That's crazy. That's wild.
Let's get a report on an industry conference,
right? Like a reporter just pulling you aside and being like, hey, what happened in there? Hey, what's going on? What are you doing? It's all a lot of files, a lot of, you know, that he filled his water glass a couple of times. What was that about? Just not interesting. And, you know, this is obviously meetings about a professional sport. So obviously there's interesting aspects to it. Sure. Because there's, you know, a lot of baseball fans. You and I are baseball fans. But this being one of the slower winter meetings in recent memory, you were reminded that, oh, yeah, we're covering a bunch of like glad handing conference calls. That's like just kind of what we're doing here. And I don't know. I saw someone say the other day that like more and more, it feels like the winter meetings might not need so much of the coverage they receive because we all think like, oh yeah, this is when all these deals are going to go down, but that's just not really the case too often anymore. I don't know. I mean, what's your take on that? I have a hard time remembering year to year what has and hasn't gone down in a big way at the winter meeting. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think we're all encouraged to think a lot about the winter meetings. Like we're, you know, MLB, I don't even know if it's MLB, like the writers all say, you know, things will happen. People are getting together. I said that. I'm like, everyone's going to be together. Something's bound to happen. You know, Andrew McCutchen wasn't there. They made a deal about like players, not a lot of players are there. It's, you know, it feels like it's changing, or it has changed, or the atmosphere of baseball has changed it, but we're still asking to give the same amount of shits about it as we have in the past. Yeah. You know. Yeah. But you're right, I don't even remember if this is like a thing that, you know, has happened in the past. You know,
I agree. I think we've done a couple of winter meetings where a lot of big stuff has gone down. And it's like remembering Christmas when you were a kid. You know, there's a couple of years when you're an adult, you're like, I want to recapture that. You know, I want Christmas to be like it was when I was a kid again. And it's just never going to be like that again. And there are a couple of winter meetings where it was like really crazy and fun and whoa, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it might never be that way again.
No, it might not.
Yeah.
We're just going to be asked to think about it that way forever.
Yeah, it's been that way. I feel like, you know, that might be the case a little bit. It certainly was this year. The Phillies left Las Vegas, the winter meetings with Andrew McCutchen, which we've talked about on other podcasts. And I think we both agree. Good move. Yeah, makes the team better. Other than that, they're involved in just about every rumor. And I can't be one of the people who says, I don't understand why people are so discouraged by what didn't happen at the winter meetings, because I do understand why people are discouraged. And it's either because, you know, you wanted to see something happen rather than not see something happen. But you also, people don't have a grip on reality or have like come to conclusions that are based on no evidence. So when the Phillies didn't sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, people just decided like, oh, well, they don't want to come here. And the Phillies' answer to that is by signing the guys they already signed and traded for. I told you this whole thing was it's such a failure. It's like, well, if you're looking at it that way, then I don't know. It's just with so much time left before the season, it just seems crazy to land on that point. But you know, I know there's a little bit of negativity in this fan base. So people kind of, they hammer that hard pretty. I mean, you knew this was a possibility after the winter meetings, that this was just where people were going to land on this team. And it's kind of evidence of the precarious place the Phillies have put themselves, where they talked up John Middleton talked up exactly, you know, what his plans were for the winter, or at least a broad description of what he imagined his plans being. And fans took that and they ran with it. And the Phillies haven't spent stupid money yet. So it's just sort of like, well, what happened? That was like the one week you're allowed to spend stupid money and they didn't do it. Ugh, it's over. It's over. Baseball's over. It's over.
We have a lot of people to blame for. Like, people have been encouraged to think about the winter meetings like that. Mm-hmm. And again, how often does it really happen? It creates like this false set of expectations that aren't met. And so everyone's all upset when they come back with, you know, Andrew McCutchen. But, you know, there's so much more offseason to go. And, you know, there's still more meetings to have. And just because, you know, Scott Boras has like a scrum at the winter meetings, you know, but he does a lot of stuff that we don't see.
Yes.
He does a ton of things that we don't see and we aren't seeing, just like all, like, you have to remember, like with the Cliff Lee deal, you know, they said that they had stayed in contact throughout, you know, over a long period of time, negotiations, checking in, you know, back and forth, that type of thing. And that's what's happening now. There's just a lot we don't see and we don't know. You have to assume that, you know, they're talking to Boras a lot, you know, beyond the big presentation or whatever the hell. You know, it's, you know, they're checking in with Boras every couple of days, or he's checking in with them. Like, just let you know, this is what, how it's happening. This is what he, you know, this is how Harper's thinking and feeling. This is a question he had. This is a question I had, you know, stuff like that.
Most of what Scott Boras does, we won't see. And that's good, just for the sake of his personal privacy, but also just because a lot of what he's doing isn't interesting. He steps forward to give us great sound bites, and more, I'm becoming more and more of a Scott Boras fan. I know he used to be seen as kind of this like villain or just like slick agent who was there to steal your team's money. But like, as we look at these kind of deals,
as we all become more woke,
you know, like, oh, who cares if our team loses money? It's a team like comprised of billionaires. Like, why? Who cares if they spend more money? And Boras is just more of a like sort of goofy dad the way he talks sometimes. I don't know. It's just that press conference next to a giant Christmas tree at the winter meetings was just not, you know, it's not like intimidating. And I think a lot of people latched on to his comments about the Phillies in that meeting. By the way, that was another moment that I think panic hit a peak among Phillies fans, in that he didn't say, obviously, that the Phillies were out. He didn't say anybody was out, because, again, it's so early. Nobody is fully out or fully in on anyone just yet. But he did say that, like, you know, he said something broad instead of something specific about the Phillies. Like, oh, you'd have to ask them about their interest level, blah, blah, blah. And then just threw in like, I know Bryce is very comfortable playing in Philadelphia, so blah, blah, you know, just stoking that flame a little bit. And people kind of took that as, you know, oh, Bryce Harper's not coming here. Which was amazing. This is amazing. And so, but
it's because we have no, what else do we have to do but like parse every single noun and verb he says and assume the worst. This is what we do. We assume the worst always, as a society, but especially as a fan base, we often choose, let's be disappointed first. That right, is almost disappointment and anger are usually our first instincts.
It is the age-old digestion process of, if I act negatively now, then anything good that happens is a pleasant surprise. And also, the other school, if I act negatively now, then I get to say I told you so and lord it over people, as if it, you know, means I have some level of intelligence guessing on the 50-50 outcome of whether or not someone will sign with the Phillies. That's age. I think we've both probably employed it at some point, in our fan careers. Like that's just how people, you know, comfort themselves during pivotal moments in franchise history like this, like whether or not one of these two guys will sign with the Phillies. It'll be a huge moment. It will probably be the biggest free agent that has ever signed with the Phillies, I would say. I mean, you can throw Cliff Lee out there, but a pitcher who throws once every 5 days, obviously it's important part of the team, but you know, we're talking about one or two generational players in the lineup every day. I mean, I don't know. That's so I get it. It's fully okay to be totally worked up. But if you're feeling negatively about how the Phillies left the winter meetings, I gotta tell you, you don't need to. But if you want to, hey man, just run with it. Run with that. But also maybe take some time away from baseball. It's not being played. It's just having meetings, and you can go and like go for a walk. Hit up a local holiday sip and shop, you know, one of those little craft fairs they do at a brewery or a food market.
Abandon sports altogether. If you're a Philadelphia fan, be a Sixers fan. The Sixers are fun right now. But, you know, you could also just abandon sports and pretend they don't exist for a little while, for like 2 to 3 weeks. Catch up on podcasts or some television shows, just to act like there are no sports, and then come back in a few weeks and maybe you'll feel better.
Maybe. We can't promise. This podcast isn't diagnosing your seasonal malaise with
that like I'm gonna do it. I'm not doing that.
Obviously none of us are doing that. We just get to say
it. None of us are actually doing that. I just want to make sure people know it's an option. It's not one that most people or anyone probably will take, but it's out there.
Well, in any case, speaking of parsing every verb and noun possible, there was a story that came out this week. It didn't come out this week. We actually, you and I both kind of leaped over this, or it slipped by us. And I honestly didn't see it getting discussed in too many places. And you know what?
I know. I was completely surprised when I saw it.
It actually was this week. So that's what I'm so surprised that we just, it didn't come up among the Good Fight Slack. I didn't really see it getting talked about on Twitter. And it's like, you know, not a huge deal, but it is something different. And that was that there's a story about Gabe Kapler pretty much saying that he's going to start being a little more publicly critical of his players, which is obviously something that was discussed a lot last season, that he, you know, as bad as things got with the team, as terrible as they were to watch, as bad as they looked, as many boneheaded plays as they got into, and how many, you know, the offense sputtered out. Help me, I'm downward spiraling listing all the 2018 Philly second half problems. God, you can't say one without listing all of them. But anyway,
nope.
During that time, Gabe Kapler was, you know, he had said early on, I'm going to stay positive. It's just not my philosophy to bash my players in public. And, you know, at first when the team was in first place, it was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. But as the team started to wilt and die, it became something that he was criticized for, not criticizing his players in public, as if that was, you know, something that was a cure-all that worked in every case. I mean, Liz, let's talk about, let's start at the beginning here. When you are a struggling young player, as the Phillies had a team that was comprised almost solely of struggling young players in 2018, when you have a team like that, obviously there's a, you know, philosophy in baseball that like a kick in the ass is going to straighten you out. But Gabe Kapler doesn't subscribe to that, and that's okay. But I also wonder like how effective do you think that is? Because that was the problem. They had all these traditionalists and columnists kind of stepping forward to be like, one guy in particular kept harping on the idea that Gabe Kapler was the participation award manager just because he wasn't punishing guys for sucking. And you don't really know how he handled things behind the closed doors of the Phillies clubhouse, because that was sealed up pretty tight since the preseason. So, I mean, in general, like, if Gabe Kapler had like stepped up in, let's say, mid to early September and been like, Odubel Herrera sucks, I'm so mad at him. This is a very good impression of a manager talking about a player in public. I'm so mad at him. Oh, he just drives me batty. I am up the wall with anger. It really gets.
I don't think anyone's talking about that.
Really gets my goat. If he had done that, and done something realistic and said, like, you know, this is an area where I'd like to see Odubel have some more focus. Like, he really, that play cost us the game out there, and I'd like to see him. He knows that, but I'd like to see some accountability. You know, I'd like to see him come out tonight and have a big game to make up for that. Like, something like, along those lines. If he had done that, are we sitting here talking about a Phillies playoff team in 2018?
I don't know if him doing that would have made a difference, but I don't necessarily think it has to make a difference on the field in order for it to have been helpful with how fans felt about the team. And I give him credit for recognizing that fan reaction is important, fan and writer reaction, at least. Because his quote says, one thing I could do immediately that I think will really resonate well with our fans in Philadelphia is, as much as I illuminate some of the things we're doing very well, I could be a little more assertive in illuminating the things that we need to work on. I do think that our fans demand that we hold them accountable. I really liked that, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and he said that he got this advice from Andy McPhail. They had dinner. And he said, you know, he thinks that holding players, staff members, and the entire organization to a very high bar publicly is something he thinks will work very well. I mean, and that's not untrue. That feels normal. I don't think fans were demanding that he come out and crap on his players. Like, no need to take a dump on anybody. But, you know, you and I were as supportive as anybody of the way he was talking about his players and dealing with things. But by the end of the season, we wanted to kill him. We want, every time he would open his mouth, I would, you know, be like, let's drown ourselves in the nearest body of water, because it would just be like, yes, we know they're good. They're trying really hard. But can you say, like, as a manager, what are you thinking? What are you feeling about your team? What can they work on? Like, I can't imagine it was that. Help, you know, it was that good for the writer, you know, the beat writers either, to always have that, you know, and never have, you know, anything negative that he would say. Not that it has to be like that angry negative, but, you know, anything that the team could really work on, or, you know, what are you actually feeling? Show us a human face.
Yeah, I mean,
you get frustrated like the rest of us. Like, show that you're human and that you get why we're annoyed. I think that's part of it, is that his kind of refusal to, you know, publicly admit things that were obvious made fans feel like they were going insane.
I get that. Whether or not a manager gives compelling answers to beat writers is of no concern to me. But
just pointing out that,
sure,
you know, it can't be easy to hear, you know, the Gabe Kapler positivity train every single day.
Right. And when he's just repeating it when he's just repeating himself, and you reach a point where it's like, well, you're obviously, we know what you're doing. You're not, it's not that he's like lying, but he's just kind of glossing over a human reaction. It becomes like, yeah, all right, well, what is the point of any of this? And obviously, anybody's going to get tired of having like a spotlight shown on the insignificance of their position or of their fandom, when your response to every question or issue that comes up is the same kind of like meaningless, flowery monologue. You know, I get that. And so it also speaks to his, he had said last year that one of the most important things he was going to do was stay open to new ideas. And we saw that a time or two. I think that, you know, if anything, he doubled down on his own ideas near the end of the season, but that's neither here nor there. And in this case, clearly a conversation with Andy McPhail registered with him. Whether that conversation was, hey, maybe do this, or was do this, we don't know. But in any case, he credits a conversation with him with loosening his expanding his mind on this, which is also healthy. And yeah, you know, I think, but to refute your one point, I do think that it reached such a point last year with the positivity and the frustration with him skipping over critiquing, that people did want to see him crap on guys. They wanted to see a very strong kind of dramatic moment so that they could say that it happened. I think at some point they just, you know, the pendulum had swung so far in the other direction. They wanted to see it swing back the other way. And they wanted to see like a Dallas Green kind of like rip a hole in these guys, kind of chair throwing meltdown. And that was never going to happen. And I mean, you and I were yeah, you say we support it. We were very much scoffing at the notion of him like doing something like that, or like coming down on his players in public after saying it was something he didn't want to do. But yeah, there's a very, I think, healthy amount of this that can happen. And I think it's good that he's turning to that. I think being open to that and knowing it's something that will help fans kind of stay tuned is important. And, you know, I always, my instinct is always to just kind of scoff at the idea that, that fans play that big of a role in what a team does. But I mean, in this case, it's a window into how much that they probably can, because seeing the responses and seeing fans tune out and seeing that fans didn't come to the park even when you know, the team looked promising for a little bit there, it indicates that they might want to do things to engage the fans a little more, or at least not frustrate them so much. Like, the team may suck again this year, you never know. Like, they may hit a really rough patch, they may miss the playoffs, you never know. But having a manager come out and give an answer that's more in tune with, like, yes, I'm aware of how frustrating this is, yes, I too feel human emotions, here are my thoughts on this, and here's you know, this guy screwed up tonight and that sucks, and we're going to work on that, instead of just like, you know, he's a good guy, he's a good kid, go out there and that's something we're going to work on and blah, blah, blah. You just get sick of it. So I think it's therapeutic for just about everybody involved that he's engaging this sort of rhetoric moving forward.
I'm so excited to see what this will look like and sound like and how long it lasts.
Yes, I too am very, very interested in seeing what angry off the leash Gabe Kapler. I know that's not what we're talking about, but I would be very curious to see that. He didn't get ejected last year, did he?
No, he did not.
Yeah,
did not get ejected. He knows it's something fans want.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he just not does it on opening day just to get it out of the way. Like, first pitch on opening day, he comes out, has a complete meltdown on the level of that minor league coach who went crazy and like pretended to be throwing a grenade at the umpire and crawling on his stomach a couple of years ago. I would love that would be great. Liz,
yes,
the AP article about this, about him changing his mindset on this, mentions Eagles supporters booing Santa Claus and throwing snowballs at him in 1968 at Franklin Field. Were you aware of this, that this story happened?
Yes, I was. I read it. I think I said in the Slack, I was saying, I can't believe he said this out loud. I'm glad someone wrote about it. I hadn't seen it. It was a couple of days old at that point. And I kept reading. I'm like, wait, hold on. He mentioned Santa Claus. We need to find out where he lives so we can egg his house.
Oh, I meant, did you know about this story from 1968? I was not aware that this
had... Oh, I'm so sorry. I completely missed the joke. I suck.
That's no joke. I feel like I definitely missed a milestone in Philadelphia sports history, that there was Santa Claus was there and they threw snowballs at him. Like, that's a series of words I never thought I would hear, frankly. That's such a scummy, good on this reporter for digging that up, like doing the research and like digging up a completely obscure tidbit like that and including it in a story about a team that is not in the NFL and plays a completely different sport. It's so relevant and important. And that's the kind of journalism I think is disappearing today. So good on this guy for including that in this unrelated story. So Bryce,
Ronald Blum, I want to egg your house. Let's just say the guy who wrote this, his name is Ronald Blum. I'm not saying I want to, I'm not saying I will. I'm just saying,
if this guy was dressed up like Santa Claus, I'd cover a ball of batteries with snow and I'd throw it at his minivan. I'm just saying I would do that. As a rational sports fan, I would take the appropriate action. Done. In any case, Liz, Gabe Kapler. We saw a picture of him surface from
my favorite thing from the winter meetings.
From the winter meeting. Me too, actually. There was a picture, just, you know, regular photo wire image came across that it shows Gabe Kapler and Joe Maddon. For anybody who wants to see this image, I believe I actually used it on a winter meetings recap on the Good Fight, on the last day of the winter meeting. So if anybody wants to see it, it's currently on the front main page of the Good Fight, and it's Gabe and Joe Maddon in street clothes. And we got a couple of great shots of Gabe at this from the winter meetings. There's one where he's, you know, all the managers have pictures in there of being the center of press conferences. They all get talked to. Then there's a couple of him, like a photographer must have just been standing in the hallway at Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. And Gabe Kapler came out like to field a phone call, and he's holding every Apple product possible and like having a reaction to whoever he's talking to on the phone. That was like pretty interesting. And then there was a picture of him speaking with Cubs manager Joe Maddon. And I guess to describe this correctly here. So again, they're both in street clothes, and Gabe Kapler is sort of like, he looks like he's in the middle of telling just a very interesting story. He's got his hand outstretched towards Joe Maddon, and Joe Madden's just looking back at him, expressionless, like no smile. Gabe's got a big open mouth smile on his face. Joe Maddon, nothing. Hands in his pockets, just staring off into space. I mean, it's so easy to characterize this. Obviously, both of them would refute it if you try to put it in a negative light, but like it looks impossible that Gabe Kapler is talking about something that Joe Maddon couldn't give less crap about. And that is, well, first of all, let's just get your reaction to the photo.
It's perfect. Like, it's not even that there's no expression. It's just like, God, what is this idiot talking to me about now?
What do you think he's talking to him about?
I'm still like, God, I'm still standing here. Why am I still standing here? He's still talking. I have no idea what they could be talking about. Like, that... You know, it's, you caught a micro expression, or just, you know, he's in transition between expressions or something. I've no idea. It looks mostly just like, well, you know, good to see you. Or I don't know, Gabe, I don't remember if Gabe talks with his hands a lot, but judging by that photo of him with the Apple products, he is a hand talker. I don't know. I've no clue what they could be talking about. Whatever it is, Joe Maddon is not interested.
Do you think
he just is not buying what Kapler is selling?
So whatever, maybe Joe Maddon saw this picture, and the reason he saw this picture was, the reason that he is now what we're going to talk about, reading a book called Managing Millennials for Dummies, is because he saw this picture and was just like, God, I gotta. Gabe Kapler's not a millennial, right? He's certainly.
No, he's in his 40s. I believe he's in his early 40s. So he's
It's 37 is the cap on millennials right now, right? That's, yeah.
Yep, right under the wire for me.
So Liz and I are both millennials. And Joe Maddon seems to, if he was our boss, he would apparently struggle to communicate with us. And maybe seeing this picture of him talking to like a significantly younger manager and like not, maybe not being interested, maybe not understanding what he's talking about, just kind of inspired him to find this book called Managing Millennials for Dummies. And he's going to need it because just to communicate better with his players, because, you know, you want to say the players get younger every year. What that actually means is, you know, we get older every year, which is how aging works, of course. But, you know, Joe Maddon, I mean, how old is Joe Maddon? He's 64 years old. He's like the wiliest, or was at one time, manager out there. He seemed to be the one who was using the most modern tactics for most of the original old school versus new school baseball battles that were going on. He seemed to employ some of the more ridiculous stuff. He's always the guy you go to as the example of like, who's going to have the most dramatic shift? Who's going to do who's going to have the left fielder playing third base for some reason, you know? But at the same time, and I guess reading this book is a testament to that as well, but he feels like he can't communicate to his millennial players well enough yet. Liz, I mean, let's just start by, let me ask you this. If Joe Maddon, that the guy I just described, feels like he can't communicate as well with his young players, how badly are other scruffier managers, older school managers, communicating with their millennial players?
I have have no idea, which is why, you know, you're seeing like a rash of younger managers being hired. Like Craig Counsell is young enough that he might actually have some idea how to communicate with people younger than him, you know, in a way that is going to actually make a difference. Like to put some of this in context, like Joe Maddon is in the final year of a 5-year contract with the Cubs and has not received an extension yet. And that is all wrapped up in this because, you know, he's won them a World Series. He's brought them back to the I think he's brought them to the playoffs three times, 15, 16, 17, 18, I think. And that he doesn't have an extension is interesting. I think he's trying to figure out what Theo Epstein wants. I think he's trying to figure out what he wants. And he's like, is this it? Is this what you want? Do you want me to learn how to talk to millennials? Do you want me to get a colorful reversible coat that looks real, real stupid? What do you want from me, Theo? What do you want?
I'll debase myself.
He's trying to figure it out. I will eat 50 hot wings.
He shows up wearing, like you say, a reversible jacket. Now I'm just thinking he's like going to show up with his understanding of a millennial, which is like a kid from the 90s. So he's just wearing like one of those reversible sports winter coats and like a backwards hat, rides a little skateboard into the meeting like, hey, what's up, old man? You want a fruit roll up?
Oh, my God.
Well,
yeah, I can't find the, oh, here it is. Jamie McCauley tweeted it's a reversible jacket. It's colorful. It's got like, it's real. It's a lot of look. He's ultra proud of it, as he is of his managing millennials for dummies, which, I mean, I admire him for trying to pick this up.
Sure.
You know, he obviously thinks he's not doing a good enough job or he's gotten some kind of feedback. You know, he wants, yeah, you saw it.
Seeing the hell out of that jacket. Wow. Hey, he showed it front and back. That's terrific. Hey, you know what? Benefits the Respect 90 Foundation. That's cool. Look, I think Joe Maddon sucks because of his quotes and response to the Addison Russell domestic violence issue in Chicago. I think he sucks for that. I didn't think he sucked before that. I was entertained by him. And I, you know, this kind of stuff is like, yeah, you know, you want to be able to communicate with your players better. So yeah, that's, I do think it's not like a ridiculous thing to do, but it is sort of, it brings it up. Like, I wonder how well, the clubhouses are that are run by older school managers. And you saying that this is why they're hiring so many younger managers. I'm looking at a list of Major League Baseball managers now, and you know, we've really hit a point where the old guard is on the way out. I mean, I'm looking at these guys and, you know, you got Bruce Bochy in San Francisco.
He's in the last year of his contract too. He's not getting an extension.
Clint Hurdle.
He's most likely done. Clint Hurdle will be in Pittsburgh till he doesn't want to.
Ron Gardenhire is back.
The Tiger, that he's with the Tigers,
yeah.
Now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Tigers hired him because they're rebuilding and don't give
right.
a shit.
Where?
And Ron Gardenhire is great. His players like him a lot, but he's not. He's an older dude with a giant face.
I mean, I don't know where he stands philosophically when it comes to baseball, but I think you reach a point as a baseball man, you know, as a manager, as a coach, that you're just like, look, I've been doing this for long enough. I'm going to do this now. And I think, yeah, the Tigers are rebuilding and don't give a crap. So they can have somebody in there who's just like, I know how to handle players and players like me. I think that's a great idea for a guy to hire. I was an advocate of John Kruk managing the Phillies when they were bottoming out. I thought that would be hilarious. So I totally get that.
That would be me.
Where do you put somebody like Rick Renneria on this scale?
That's a good question.
He's like in his, he's in his mid 50s, so he's not quite far gone yet. I think Ned Yost is.
Oh yeah, he's also in the last year of his contract.
That makes sense.
Yep, he's almost certainly retiring at the end of. It's always a question like, will you retire and say I am no longer looking for a job, or will you just leave and continue to think you might get a job? You know,
and I mean, Terry Francona will have a managing job until he doesn't want one anymore. But then after
that's
Alex Cora, AJ Hinch, Brad Ausmus, Rocco Baldelli, Aaron Boone, Scott Service, Kevin Cash, Torey Lovullo. You know, David Bell, I forgot, is now managing the Reds.
Oh, God. My God. My God.
I mean, Dave Roberts, I don't put as like being too old school. Like, he's managing the team that people are like, that's what the Phillies are trying to be. So they're employing new tactics. Dave Martinez, Andy Green, Gabe Kapler, Mickey Callaway, Craig Counsell. I mean, yeah, it's there are more younger. It definitely skews younger right now, the managing game. So good on Joe Maddon for kind of realizing that and being like, look, if I want to do this, and maybe you're right, maybe he's just not even reading it and he's just like, look, Theo, I'm helping. But who knows? It's just, it's an interesting thing that a manager has to take on right now. Cause I mean, Liz, how well do you think you could communicate with millennials on the younger side of the millennial scale at this point? Because I mean, well, let's just start with that.
I think I'm all right. I think some of it hinges on just having a good managing style in general, not being a dick, not having outsized expectations, but that's also a generational thing. I am in general more, you know, looser than Joe Maddon would be when managing because he is older and comes from, you know, a different time and a different place, which is kind of what this is all about. It's just weird that he needs a book to tell him any of this. I mean, I guess maybe he does. Maybe some people do. I think he is reading it. I think he would be dumb not to, because he obviously feels like he's having some issues. But yeah, I mean, I do it at my job. You know, I have to talk to people who are younger than me, and it's just tell them to do things. And I just feel like it's called being a decent person. How would you want to be managed?
No, I agree. I feel like you and I have both worked in a plethora of workplaces and environments and with other people and with staffs and people of different ages. And I've never felt like there was somebody who, because of our age gap, I simply could not communicate with. Maybe, I mean, more effectively, perhaps, but it never felt like a stumbling block to me. But maybe that's a evidence of my own millennial, pompousness. Who knows?
Maybe. Yes, the millennial pompousness. My God.
So yeah, that feels like it's probably an ongoing issue in baseball as it turns over here. I mean, we see that in fandom. Obviously, we've talked on this podcast about like MLB's marketing issues and the reason it wants to bring in a new generation of fans and how the median age of the baseball fan right now is pretty high. And I mean, just thinking about that today as we were having a discussion about MLB marketing in the Good Fight Slack. How do you market to one fan base, like go all in on marketing to a fan base without alienating the other one? Because in baseball, things are so split, and people take such offense on either side when it's marketed to one or the other, because you know the interests of one or the other can be so different, like just so polarizing. So it's not an easy job. I'm glad I don't have it. MLB has not done a good job. Certainly, I don't feel. So yeah, I think that ongoing split is going to be an issue faced in most facets of the game moving forward. So the reason we were talking about this in the Good Fight Slack was earlier today, Major League Baseball tweeted out a meme of sorts about the ongoing feud between Kanye and Drake, and used a brawl. Was it the Bryce Harper Hunter Strickland brawl?
That's a good question. I don't know. Let's look it up.
Yeah, it was one of their, you know, it was a brawl where somebody got hit with a pitch, charged the mound, and a fight broke out. And you know, they were trying to be cute. They were like, "Oh, this is Kanye," and they were a brand using a universal moment of pop culture to relate their brand to it. Like, that's all it was transparently corporate and attention seeking. So it was dumb. It was nothing. I wouldn't have known about it if is it former catcher or current catcher Chris Iannetta hadn't quote tweeted it and made a comment about how Major League Baseball, this is an incident that Major League Baseball would hand out fines for, and yet here they were using it as a way to market to fans. And so they were like simultaneously saying that this is a serious enough offense to result in fines for the players involved, but it's also like teehee, silly and giggly to use in memes about rappers feuding. And he just was pointing out the hypocrisy in that. And I mean, I don't think he's wrong.
No, I don't think he's wrong either. It is kind of hypocritical.
I sort of introduced this idea, and I didn't realize I had all these feelings about this issue, but I introduced this idea that, you know, brawls are often the result of one of baseball's unwritten rules being broken. And this is something that, I mean, you know, I'm sure it's serious. It's part of playing baseball, these unwritten rules. They've obviously been mocked in the past couple of years because we don't take as seriously the offenses that the ball players take because we are not baseball players. But at the same time,
oh my God, hold on. I'm sorry. MLB deleted the tweet. I was looking for it. They deleted it.
And that's even more hilarious. So as an added segment of this drama, MLB went ahead and deleted the tweet, which, you know, it's the second MLB sanctioned tweet that had to be deleted this week because of poor audience reaction. But yeah, I felt like it introduced this idea that the unwritten rules are unwritten. They're unwritten for a reason, because when you try to make sense of them in a legitimate way, you just kind of get all tangled up in contradictions and hypocrisies and just sort of ridiculousness. And social media takes these unwritten rules and like puts them in written form or puts them in visual form. And you probably see more and more that it was a player who pointed it out was sort of even more entertaining and encouraging. But you're going to see more and more people being like, hey, that doesn't make sense. Hey, one of the debates we've had in baseball between new fans and younger fans and older fans is the idea of bean balls, the idea of takeout slides, the idea of collisions at the plate, that like some people think that players should just get hurt and that's just part of the game. And some people are like, that's ridiculous. This man's skull is in two pieces. This can't be a part of baseball. And a brawl is like, you know, I mean, in hockey, this is not a conversation. In hockey, the refs stand back and watch two guys go at it.
And then they go to the penalty box and that's it. Like, right. If it was actually a part of the game, like that didn't, you know, involve suspensions and fines most of the time, that would be one thing. But, you know, like, it feels weird to get super annoyed at this because they're trying to appeal to a younger audience. You know, how do you appeal to a younger audience? Memes, apparently, is what I've been told. I'm an old woman, I feel.
I want to be a fly on the wall of the meeting where they were like, memes, we got to reach the youths through memes. It's the only way. We tried Pokemon, we tried Minions, but memes, I think we really got it this time.
But I mean, and so it feels weird because they're trying to attract younger players, but there's got to be a way to do it without, you know, rolling out a gif of a fight that got people suspended. Like, if that was the Hunter Strickland Bryce Harper fight, that fight ended someone's career due to concussions. Who the hell was that? It was a Giants player. He had a concussion and ended his career. Time. People got suspended and fined, and they're rolling it out like it's in, like, you know, acting like it's a thing right, that should be, you know, yes, it did happen, and no, we shouldn't forget it, but maybe tossing it out there like that is not the wisest thing to do.
And the 26-year-old who tweeted that out wasn't thinking of Chris Iannetta when he tweeted that out. He wasn't thinking of having to be held accountable by actual baseball players when he or she tweeted that out. Like, that just doesn't occur. There's like I feel like there's probably a disconnect between the baseball that gets played on the field and the MLB marketing and social media department. So there's obviously going to be a disconnect there. I mean, baseball just kind of needs to decide if brawls and other things of that nature are a part of the game or not. And if it is a part of the game, then anything can be used in a marketing campaign. If it's something that you're shaming the players for, if you're punishing the players for, then why do you get to then go back and I think about that when I, you know, you find clips, specific clips of brawls like online, like MLB goes out of its way to be like, oh yeah, this brawl was in this game. They don't show guys who run on the field anymore because they don't want to encourage people from doing it. So if you don't want people to get into brawls, which clearly you don't because you find them for it, why do you show them on TV? Why not cut away? Why include them as separate clips on your YouTube channel? You know, so they got to make a decision here because you're right. Brawls are entertaining. Yeah. You know, you want to see that. It's funny. We make jokes about it. It's going to engage younger people who are, like, you know, living off video clips. That's going to happen. So this is just, and this is what I mean. Baseball is going to find itself sort of wrapped up in its own little contradictions here, and it might have to make some decisions about stuff that's just sort of lived in a gray area for generations. And that's kind of interesting. I mean, like you said, the guy's career ended. Remember that Reds-Cardinals brawl from a couple years back when Brandon Phillips had been like, I hate the Cardinals, they suck. And then he was like the leadoff hitter in the next game. And Yadier Molina was like, he like tapped him with his bat. And Yadier Molina's like, don't touch me. And they started a bench-clearing brawl before a pitch had even been thrown. And I forget who it was, but I'm pretty sure Johnny Cueto was like up against the net, kicking with his cleats, kicked somebody in the back and ended his career. Like that's not an outlier. That happens. It happens all the time. You know, like guys get hurt celebrating at home plate after a walk off. They're going to get hurt in a brawl where people are physically trying to hurt each other. So yeah, it's culturally, it's a part of baseball and it contributes to the entertainment factor of baseball, but is it a part of the sport or not? Somebody needs to decide. I don't know. Who decides that?
I don't know. We should find out, though. Have them on the podcast.
The millennials do when they're not watching Minions. Trust me.
Millennials and our Minions.
Oh, baseball. What have you done to us? Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Thanks for hanging in there this week for us. The Good Fight put out a lot of coverage on the winter meetings, so feel free to go back and catch up if you missed any of the goings-ons there. There's plenty of coverage of Andrew McCutchen. I know we talked about him on the latest episode of Hittin' Season, or the second most recent episode of Hittin' Season. John Stolness talked to Marshall Harris, media personality Marshall Harris, on the latest episode of Hittin' Season to talk about where the Phillies go from here. And Trevor Strunk and I discussed Andrew McCutchen's legacy of beating up on the Phillies as a member of the Pirates, specifically in 2014 when he absolutely shredded the Philadelphia Phillies. So that's a great example and sort of comprehensive look at Andrew McCutchen when he was in his prime. That was a lot of fun and really entertaining. So subscribe, download, and rate all members of the Good Fight podcast family, Hittin' Season, The Dirty Inning, and Continued Success. And keep going back to the Good Fight for off-season Phillies coverage. We have a lot of it. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.